Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd of ESPN.com. Dave, a little bit of interesting news yesterday. We're halfway through the preseason, or a little bit more than halfway through the preseason in terms of how much time they're done with the Latrobe aspect of camp. There are two games left. The Steelers fire special teams coach Al Everest. This has to have come to surprise, certainly to everybody in the media and the fan base. You never see this stuff coming. You never know what's going on exactly behind the scenes, but you don't expect a coach who's come to training camp to get canned.
No, you don't. He was entering his third season. Everything looked fine. Now, of course, Tomlin hit on it after the Colts game, saying that he didn't like the return aspect of it, and that was below the line. But you didn't get the feeling that he was going to get canned whatsoever, which makes you kind of wonder, we don't know all what was involved here. Maybe it wasn't so much performance as far as philosophical type difference.
Yeah, and, I mean, let's be clear. He didn't fire Al Everest because they didn't return the ball well against the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, it just, you don't fire a guy based on the performance in one preseason game when, as you and I have talked about, they're mixing and matching guys, trying to figure out who's going to be on the special teams units anyway.
Yeah, and even looking at the last preseason, I mean, Al Everest, I've heard interviews with him before this offseason where he said, that you are mixing and matching people so much during the preseason here to find out who fits where. Now the special teams unit did rank 27th in punt return average, 14.5 yards, and 29th in kick return average, 4.0 kickoff return average through the first two games. And as far as defending punts and kickoffs through the first two preseason games, the Steelers ranked 18th with an 8.5 number and 22nd in kickoff return average allowed with 26.3. When you throw stats on it like that and know that they're trying to get people in right areas and places and a lot of green people here from week to week, it had to be philosophical difference, or it had to be something, I don't know, something that might come out in a couple of weeks that we just didn't know.
Yeah, I'm going to lean toward the latter because philosophical difference, look, you said third year, so 2010, the return game was pretty terrible. 2011 wasn't much better. 2011 was much better. We've seen improvement. So I don't know that, a philosophical difference, you'd think you'd address that in the offseason. I don't think Al Everest probably came in and changed the way he wanted to do things at camp this year without Mike Tomlin being on board. So the easy thing is to point to, they had a bad game in the return game, but I feel like, they've taken two back for touchdowns. We might still be in the same situation, but that's an easy thing and probably a better thing for all involved for Mike Tomlin to point to. I just, that's like, the analogy for me would be cutting a player because he had a bad game in the second exhibition game, a proven player. So, I don't know what it is, but I have to think it runs deeper. There was a comment on Twitter that he was late for work, and could that have been it? Could be there be personal issues? Sure, it could be all those things. We don't know. I feel, my personal opinion is, it wasn't the return game against the Colts that was the issue. It could have been the final straw, but I don't think it was the issue.
When you go back and look at, nothing's been as bad as the final year of Bob Ligashevsky there in 2009, where that was the year they allowed the four kickoff returns for touchdowns in a five-game span there. Now, Everest's first game or first year in 2010, it wasn't fantastic, but it was better than what it was. And as you said, there had to be something that we don't know about here. And the thing is, too, Amos Jones, the guy who's going to take over for Al Everest – dates, you know, going back, he coached with Tomlin at the University of Cincinnati, and Tomlin hired him on to his staff when he was hired with the Steelers here, of course, in 2007. But still, you know, they had a firing since then when they fired Ligashevsky, you know, following the 2009 season. And it appeared on the surface that Al Everest was a Mike Tomlin hire. You know, I would hope that that the Roonies are not getting involved in hiring special teams coaches.
Yeah, it's Mike Tomlin hire. Got to be, you know, at this level, when you're going to get special teams coaches, you talk to your coordinators, your staff, see who's recommended, see who fits. Al Everest has been here 2 years, and the team has gone to a Super Bowl and had probably their best overall special teams units last year that they've had in a long time. So that just leads me to believe that there are other issues here. Don't know what they are.
Let me ask you this, though. That final kick by Danny Ratman that was, you know, blocked and kind of fluttered over and all, you know, there are two Colts players leapfrogged over. It was David DeCastro and Ryan Lee in there, if you can believe that, on that final field goal. I had to go back and double again because, you know, you had 266s on the roster right now. I thought for sure it was Mike Blank that was in there. But, no, it's DeCastro and Ryan Lee in there that just get leapfrogged in there. And, you know, people are asking, you know, is that legal? And you go back and look at some of the rules, and the thing that came to mind was Trent Cole of the Philadelphia Eagles back in, I think it was 2008. He did it in the regular season against the Giants to block a kick. So you can leapfrog a guy like that. I wonder how much of that when Tomlin went back and finally watched that film to see what happened, that you have two players just do an easy leapfrog like that over your line and block a kick. I wonder how much of that fired him up there at the end.
You know, you'd think he'd mention it because if you're going to point to specifics and that was it, you know, to me, you know, it's at some level the players are responsible there. So let's not absolve anybody of blame.
Sure, they didn't even come out of their stance.
Yeah, that's bad. I mean, that, you know, it's you know, it's bad all around. So yeah, could it be a contributing factor? Absolutely.
The good thing is now is Amos Jones has already been in house. He knows the personnel. He's got two and a half, you know, two more games and then another half week on top of it to get it sewn up. So, you know, in the big scheme of things, it's not a big deal.
No, it is not a big deal. It's just curious. you know, again, I guess it also probably keeps everybody on point.
Absolutely. Everybody knows their job. You know, yeah, you hit it. It keeps them on point.
okay, Dave. Roster issues in terms of what's going on. We know where we are. We've had some updates on, I guess, Isaac Redman's probably the most interesting one. Today, the past couple of days, gone through the situation where he said he feels fine after practice yesterday, like he never injured himself. The beat writers don't seem to be very happy. They're not getting updates in terms of whether Isaac Redman actually had the MRI or didn't have the MRI. I had thought that we had heard that he did have the MRI, but Tomlin wouldn't confirm it. And then I guess he broke the news possibly about Al Everest being fired to a national writer, Jay Glazer, as opposed to the beat guys.
Yeah, that's not surprising. I'm pretty sure Redman said that he did have the MRI, but it was on his hip. And it was the hip and not the groin that ended up being the problem. But I saw an interview with him after practice yesterday, and he's looking, you know, it sounds like he's going to play. And this is a guy that, heading into or after the game last week against the Colts, you kind of thought, okay, well, this is a guy that they might shut down for the game against the Bills and then kind of fill him out for the final preseason game against the Panthers. But by all looks right now, he worked this week and supposedly had no setbacks. And it looks like he's going to play against the Bills on Saturday night. Now, how long he's going to play, we don't know, and you know, Tomlin did say yesterday during his press conference that the starter is going to play at least a half. Now, you know, is Redman going to get 13 or 14 carries in there? No, but he, you know, he looked forward to getting banged around a little bit because let's face it, against the Eagles in the first preseason game, he only got like 11 snaps, I think there was, and what was it, like five carries. for 14 yards and caught, of course, the pass to open up the game there. So I would look for him to play and probably play, I don't know, 13, 14 snaps, probably carry another five or six times before giving way to Jonathan Dwyer and the other backs on the roster.
Yeah. The running back situation is, I guess it's cleared itself up a little bit. Unfortunately, the kid out of Illinois, the Steelers signed, is not going to play. Hamstring issue. That's unfortunate for him because I don't know that he had a shot to make the roster, but being injured gives him no shot to make the roster. I mean, maybe now he can contend for that practice squad spot that we thought was going to go to John Clay, but another guy who's not going to be active for the game.
Yeah, and with Mendenhall now back on the 53, though, you have to wonder, you know, even if the Steelers keep five backs like I think they will now on the 53, you know, Ford on the practice squad, I mean, that's just too many running back bodies running around on a 53-man roster during the season, in my opinion. So it's just unfortunate timing for Jason Ford. I mean, he really was out on the outside looking in anyway, but he did have a good game with limited preparation. And I went back and watched that film, of course, several times, and he had a nice block and a bit blitz pickup there, in a play action play there. And, you know, it looked like this kid might have a little something to him. So, you know, maybe he put enough on film that another team maybe will look at him at the practice squad. But hamstrings are you know, common with guys that are all of a sudden show up in camp and not used to the wear and tear like that. So unfortunate for him, but he will not travel to Buffalo. Mendenhall won't travel to Buffalo either. No surprise there. And a handful of others are not going to travel.
Right, Harrison, Worlds, obviously.
Now, Tomlin didn't say Worlds, but, I mean, Worlds can't play because he's still on the PUP list. But, you know, Tomlin and these injury updates. I mean, but, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if Worlds didn't travel to Buffalo, but he didn't mention specifically during his press conference.
He is turning slightly Belichickian in terms of his forthcoming nature. This PUP stuff, he said repeatedly before that Colts game that guys wouldn't be reviewed until after the Indy game. And then we saw three guys come off the PUP last week. So,
did you see the interview with him on Steelers.com, the one that Bob Labriola does every week that they air the radio version right before the game?
Did not see it.
He said he was asked specifically why he kind of lists, you know, all through Latrobe, he would say a player's day-to-day or week-to-week. And, he says he uses it as motivation to these guys. You know, even if a player that he knows, I forget the exact words that Tomlin used to Labriola, but, you know, basically use it as motivation that, even a guy that he knew had a knee problem or a hamstring problem or something, and he knew would be out two to three days. He'd used the term day to day, meaning trying to motivate him to get back. And same with the week to week guys, trying to motivate him to get back. But if anybody gets the chance, make sure you probably have to dig a little bit in the archives of Steelers.com. But it's the sit down that Bob Labriola does with Mike Tomlin every week, and there's a couple of interesting Q&As in there in that set of questions.
All right, I will check it out. So we have the injury status. In terms of what happens in the game, we know now the quarterback situation. Jared Johnson's gotten a look the first two games. He's going to get a look, probably a very long look, all the second half, I would imagine, in the last game, at least against Carolina. I would think Leftwich and Batch may both get a quarter of the last game. But this game, Ben's going to get the first half, and then they'll go in order. I think Leftwich and Batch will get each a quarter. Dave, does Jared Johnson go into next week with still a chance of making some sort of aspect of the organization?
David, I don't think so. I think this week the rotation speaks pretty much volumes. You're going to have Roethlisberger, of course, a half, and then you're going to try to get Leftwich and Batch in there. You're not going to play Johnson this week. You're going to play him next week against the Panthers. And then, too, you kind of wonder, four quarterbacks running around you know, once the season starts with the fourth one being Jared Johnson on the practice squad, yeah, that's way too many too. You probably really need that body elsewhere. So, I'm starting to lean, even though I put Jared Johnson on my latest 53-man roster projection as being on the practice squad. You know, when you look at this thing, you know, from 30,000 feet, I just don't see it. You know, I just don't see it happening. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen because, you know, speaking in absolutes when it comes to stuff like that is pretty foolish. But, you know, I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I don't even think he makes a practice squad.
Okay. What else are we looking at this weekend? I mean, things are starting to take shape. I guess at the receiver position, the Mike Wallace thing is still the elephant in the room, and it appears from so many guys within the locker room saying that Wallace is going to be back. I would assume maybe come, you know, he signs his tender Monday and he starts, you know, he's got the acclimation period. So you would think maybe, I actually don't know if he actually has an acclimation period. I would assume because guys coming off PUP do and the guys they signed off waivers do, I would assume Wallace does as well, but I don't know that factually. So, but let's assume he does. You would think it might actually make sense for him to, I don't know if he could sign it Saturday or today and have any of that stuff count as days toward the acclimation period or if it has to be actual practices. These are technicalities we don't have in front of us. But he probably can't get practicing with the Steelers till middle of the week, and then they have the Carolina game. So he's going to get some game plan the whole Denver time, and he'll get a lot of reps. Would you expect if it actually goes like this that he'll be the starting wideout at week one in Denver?
Yeah, I do, but I don't think he'll be a 60-play, you know, 60-snap guy. I think depending on how much of the playbook he absorbs going forward, I think realistically you're probably looking at probably 20 to 25 snaps possibly maybe in the game against Denver, you know, because just it's going to take time to get him, you know, fit into what Todd Haley's doing. And, you know, he's an outside guy only, though, that he has that to his advantage here. So, you know, I think it could go either way. But, you know, just from a conditioning standpoint, football conditioning standpoint and understanding of the offense, I would not be surprised not to see him play every snap in Denver.
Yeah, you know, I will go back to the other side of things and say, because Mike Wallace is in here late, he is not at a greater risk of being injured. He's been working out in Florida. You hear guys say he's in the best shape of his life. You've heard Keenan Lewis and Ike Taylor kind of hint at that. Hard to know. We'll just assume he's been doing his work and he's ready to go. As long as he's doing his running, his sprinting, working on his cuts and stuff like that, he is no more susceptible to injury because he hasn't signed a contract than any guy who's been in camp. Muscle pulls happen. Could it happen to Mike Wallace? Absolutely, it could happen to Mike Wallace. But it's not 99% sure it's not going to be because he wasn't under contract and in camp. It's going to be because he pulled his muscle.
Absolutely. And like you see with these guys like Jason Ford here, when you come off, and we saw a bunch of it last year immediately after the lockout ended, all these guys scramble to get in. A lot of them weren't, you know, probably working out like they had should have been after the lockout.
Right.
They come in,
right.
You had hamstrings all over the place, you know, calf problems and all like that. But yeah, just holding out does not make you injury, you know, susceptible to injury, you know, as far as that goes. But I think he's going to be in great shape, and I do believe there is that acclimation period that you're talking about. So you know, maybe he signs it today, but still, you know, if he signed it today, then that means he would likely travel with the team so he could have an earpiece in to listen to, you know, the play calling and all like that. And I don't think that's going to happen. So I think, you know, as everybody's saying, and what Ike Taylor said a couple or a week and a half or so ago, that he expects him in on either Sunday or Monday. So that's when I would look for him. And then, you know, at that point, you have to wonder with the game on what Thursday, you know, he might run around there a couple of plays against the Panthers, but I find it, you know, kind of unlikely, you know, with that short of prep time there. So, and then he'll have a couple weeks to see if he can get a long-term deal done, and we'll move on from there.
Yep. Yeah, all makes sense to me. Then the O-line, we know how that's going to go. We'll see what happens. The D-line, Dave, any further thoughts about, I've seen some different projections on 53-man. It seemed to me Al Woods was ahead of, you know, two guys that we've liked and talked about from the very beginning of the preseason, Corbin Bryant and Al Woods. And it seemed to me from the up until the games and through the Eagle game that Al Woods was the guy who was a step ahead. Where do you see them currently?
Hi, I'm trying to get a grasp on it because this past week, Corbin Bryant played three times the amount of snaps almost that Al Woods did. He got into the game much earlier there and at left defensive end. And Al Woods mostly has been worked on the right side when he's played. So this is shaping up to and Corbin Bryant, I thought, had the better of the two games this week. You know, of course, Al Woods in that first game had the interception where he worked real hard to get himself in position there. But I don't know how to call this just yet, David. And I we'll see how it plays out this week in this tune-up game because, you can read a little bit into the rotation and how people enter the game in this third preseason game, I think, because, I mean, let's face it, this is kind of how – this is a full-fledged example of how the depth chart is in the coach's mind, in my opinion, everything except for special teams. So that's too close to call. But, I mean, Corbin Bryant did enter the game before Al Woods this week and saw – I'm trying to look at my snap counts right here right now, but let's see. Corbin Bryant had 33 snaps in that game. Let's see, Al Woods had 12, so you'll take that for what it is.
All right, interesting. From the time I left camp about a week ago now, I would have thought Al Woods was ahead. I didn't get to see, as I said, every snap of the Colts game, so I was interested to hear your opinion. So it's interesting that he did get those snaps. Those will be two guys to pay close attention to. The outside, the linebacker position, again, is another area of a lot of focus. We'll see how the special teams units line up in the game on Saturday. I'm interested to see what kind of action Adrian Robinson gets and if he gets a lot of snaps. If he gets some snaps in the first half, see how much action he gets. We'll watch Chris Carter closely. If I were guessing right now, I'd say there's probably a 30% chance Chris Carter starts the opener. I think James Harrison's going to try to get it out there, but certainly he's going to get action. The inside guys we know, but it'll be very interesting to watch the rotation of the inside guys after the starters come out. Stevenson Sylvester, I doubt we'll see. He's not even going to go, right?
So he's not going to go. There's no way he's going to go in this game.
So it'll be interesting to watch the inside guys after that. The Morty Ivies, Brandon Jacobs. This is where I thought Morty Ivey last year really took a step forward in the third preseason game and played great. I felt like there was a real chance he could make the team. Didn't happen, but here he is back in camp, and we'll see what these inside guys do. It certainly is a great chance for Sean Spence to show that he's a useful player and maybe gets on the field during the regular season even before we thought, which was, you know, we think as a rookie – most guys are unlikely to get on, but maybe he sees time as the year progresses. But a big game tomorrow could even change that scenario.
You know, the thing with Brandon Johnson this week is this past week he played entirely inside. No outside snaps for him. Now, of course, Stevenson Sylvester was down and is probably going to be down to start the season. So that makes sense there. Morty Ivey, who worked on the right outside linebacker week one against the Eagles, saw snaps. He came in after Lamar Woodley was done for the night at left outside linebacker, and then later on he flipped over back over to the right side. So if you're scoring at home, I'm liking the chances of Morty Ivey making this 53-man roster now due to all these injuries, as probably a 53rd-type guy on the roster. Hey, let's face it, that even though that block punt of his the other night against the Colts looked easy, those things get noticed. You know, those are splash plays. So, as much as I like Adrian Robinson, and I do, and I know I've made a lot of people mad in my latest 53-man roster projection, this is a kid that I just think is going to try. You know, they're going to try to slide him to the practice squad because if you remember during the broadcast, Chris Collinsworth talked about a conversation he had with Mike Tomlin in the pre-production meeting, and we don't know if Mike Tomlin's comments were used to be motivation or to drive people away from Robinson or what? He said, well, basically this is a one-trick pony. He can get after the quarterback, but he doesn't play special teams and he doesn't drop, meaning drop in coverage, of course. So, you know, and Adrian Robinson continues to get just really the third team snaps. And you would think, you know, we'll see how it plays out this week in a third preseason game. But you would think if a guy is going to make your roster, if you were looking at him to make your 53, even though you would not expect much from him from the linebacker position, being that deep on the depth chart, you would think he would get some earlier snaps in the rotation. And B, you would think you would see this kid show up more on special teams, but you really haven't.
Right, I'm with you on that. Back in the secondary, I guess the guys I want to see, Robert Golden, see where and what kind of steps he gets. He and Damon Cromartie Smith battling for jobs. I think the corner situation has worked itself out pretty straightforward.
Absolutely straightforward.
Yeah, you know, fifth corner. What do we think of Terrence Fredericks these days?
He's almost played entirely as the backup nickel to Cortez Allen. He's seen very, very few snaps at outside. So, you know, I envision him making the roster as the fifth corner. I can't see him walking into the season with only four. That's just, you know, that just doesn't fit their MO. They normally carry six. You know, so you know, normally they carry 10 total defensive backs. And you know, I see them doing that this year with Frederick being the fifth, because unless you keep a guy like Josh Victorian, that would be the only other guy I would think that's kind of splashed, in my opinion, during the preseason. And, I, you know, if you felt like it, you could get him to the practice squad, I have a feeling. So I think they carry Terrence Frederick as the backup nickel on the 53. And, of course, Frederick can play special teams as well.
Yeah, yes, it's going to be – Frederick's going to be an interesting guy. We don't think Paulson's probably going to get there. I guess the one other area is the question mark is what are they going to do with that tight end fullback position? You got Will Johnson. It looks like Pope – well, Miller's obviously a given. It looks like Pope's going to make it, and then we got a little bit of a question mark, right?
Yeah, that's where I'm kind of tied up on this. Are we going to keep 10 linebackers? And a lot of this is predicated what the ultimate situation is with Harrison and Worlds. You know, and until we get a kind of a clearer picture on this, it's going to be cloudy there. But, you know, do you go into the season with just two tight ends and one fullback, or do you go into the season with two tight ends, one fullback, and a guy that can play kind of both?
Jamie McCoy's that guy, right?
Man, he sure didn't look good in his snaps at fullback the other night, let me tell you that. And, you know, when you look at his special teams work in week one with the two block and the back penalties against the Eagles, you know, you hate to give a guy a roster position by default, you know. Yeah, I'm kind of leaning that way. You know, maybe this week, I tell you one thing to look for this week is Justin Peel, the new, you know, the veteran that they signed, to see if he gets any snaps at say the fullback position. He didn't last week. It was all at tight end. Also curious to see if maybe they try to use Pope at the fullback position too, because they like to use the fullback on a lot of these formations, both weak and strong side fullback. Looks out of the eye there, and to carry just one fullback in there, what if Will Johnson goes down in a game? You're going to scrap a lot of your you know, formation stuff that you do with the fullback then. And you know, I guess the plan right now would be to put somebody like a Pope in there or you know, something along those lines. But watch closely those backup fullback/tight end snaps this week against the Bills, and let's see if we can get a hint of what's going on there. Now, of course, you got Wesley Saunders coming back after his suspension, but that's several weeks down the line. And a kid like David Paulson has shown absolutely nothing in the blocking department. He shows very, very you know, nice soft hands and ability to get off the line out and out into routes. But outside of that, this is an area of the 53-man roster that's causing me fits.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. And I'll go back to, I said the same thing, I think, a week or two ago when David Johnson got hurt. If you're going to run your offense with a fullback, you better make sure you got a fullback on the roster. And as you said, if Will Johnson goes down, what do you do? Is Jamie McCoy a guy? Is there another guy? Is there another guy who can play that role? How are the snaps going? of course, not being there and seeing it this week, I'm less in touch with exactly how the snaps are going. But something, again, to you know, there are things now in this third game. I told you in the first two games how Dave and I very much like to watch the second halves and watch a lot of these young guys. Well, we've seen now a fair bit of them, and now we can think more about specific guys and how they're used, schemes and formations, and see how things start to play out. And that's what I'd look for in this game. You're going to see Bruce Arians pretty much open up the offense at Bruce Arians. You're going to see Todd Haley, if you watch the Colts, you're going to see Bruce Arians open up the offense. If you watch the Steelers, you're going to see Todd Haley probably have the majority of things in there that they're going to use. And it'd just be interesting to see what percentage of the snaps in the first half there's a fullback on the field.
Absolutely. And, you know, another thing that might have Jason Ford with that hamstring, I would have been interested to see him get some snaps at fullback this.
Yes, I agree. It's, as I said, very bad timing for him.
Yeah, you know, that would have been something I think that would have been worth watching there, because not only does he give you, and plus, of course, now he would have to play special teams too, and he would have probably got a very, very long look this week on special teams as well too. But yeah, and I think that's a reason why they signed him as well too. This kid's a big back. He played some fullback, I believe, at Illinois. And like I said, there was some, you know, saw some stuff on tape last week with him stepping up and just, you know, putting it to, I think it was a linebacker coming through there on a play action play. So very bad timing for him. Now there's still a couple of weeks left. So maybe if he can shake this hamstring injury, maybe there's still hope, but, yeah, that's definitely, and with Todd Haley, you know, you would think they're going to try to at least stretch the field a little bit more this week. Of course, you don't want to, your whole playbook out there on film right now either, but you have to get some work a little bit to stretch the field, so to speak. I think we've seen pretty much all the formations, though. I've been going through and charting these. We have, I'm going to read off a couple of them, too. You got the strong eye, of course. You've got the both weak and strong. Strong eye. You've got a single back with the trips bunched either right or left. Sometimes in that trips bunch, you're using two tight ends with one wide receiver, and sometimes you're using it with two wide receivers and one tight end. We've seen both versions of that in some shotgun type stuff. We've actually seen a few shotgun with a strong slot, meaning the guy in the slot is strong. The halfback either to the weak or the strong side of the quarterback in the backfield. We have seen some empty with some two tight end, two wide receivers, and one halfback as well too in the shotgun. But we've gotten a good look at all the Todd Haley stuff, and you can start to see with the personnel that he uses, David, especially when he uses the fullback and sometimes two tight ends in Pope and Heath Miller in here. He is real good at keeping some of the same personnel on the field to do different things, to line up in different formations where he can both run and pass out of those formations. And that was the multiple that we kind of heard about heading into this thing with Todd Haley. But when you go back through and you start recognizing on tape these formations, what he's trying to do with them and the personnel that he's using, you can see how he can flip this thing into the no huddle or the hurry up without having to change personnel on the field as well too. So, you know, that's kind of interesting to go inside the tape and watch that.
Yep. And then special teams, well, there are legit battles there. I think the punter thing is wide open in my mind. Kapanos's injury has left the door open for Butler. He's been reasonably good. He's looked reasonably good in practice. I think the long snapper, I think you go with the guy you know, but that's not guaranteed. And then the kicking job, I think, is Swisham's to lose. But I assume Swisham will get most of the action tonight, Saturday night against Buffalo. So we'll see how he does. If he kicks well, I think he keeps the job. If he doesn't, it'll be open going into the last week. They're going to cut 15 guys to get down to 75.
Is it 80 or 75?
75.
Are you sure? Because last year it was 80.
I'm sure.
Well, ESPN differs with you on that, so right. I'm not saying that the ESPN's right, but last year it was 80 that they cut down to. So there's two versions of this floating around. There's an 80 and a 75 floating around, but I just want to make sure last year it was 80.
All right, well, it's going to be easy either way. They're going to get 10 guys most people have never heard of out of camp, and I think it's down to 75. And then, you know, you still got a lot of guys for this game Thursday. But don't rule out the Steelers going to the waiver wire here. I would say in most seasons, even when they've had teams probably I don't think are as talented as this team, you don't see them going to the waiver wire. But they've got a hole at that fullback tight end position. They've got Wes Saunders going on the inactive list for 4 weeks, a suspended inactive list. So that's one thing that's going to happen there. And then, again, I think they'll look around the linebacker situation. I doubt that they'll go – I don't see them probably signing anybody at any position other than linebacker or this fullback tight end hybrid position. So, but it would not surprise me at all.
I would be shocked if it was a linebacker this late. I would utterly be shocked if it was a linebacker. The tight end slash fullback, that's a possibility. I just don't know who it would be. And I, let's watch and see what Justin Peele, where he lines up, if he gets any fullback snaps at all this week. But Leonard Pope in Todd Haley's offense in Kansas City, I remember seeing some snaps with him back there, so that might be the backup plan for them, you know, basically to head into the season with just two tight ends and one fullback. And if, you know, Will Johnson goes down in that game, then Leonard Pope's just going to have to step up and take that, you know, take that spot. But when you do that too, then you're ruling out a lot of stuff that you use that use tight end, two tight end sets, which isn't terribly a lot, but we have seen that in the formation with that. But it's better to lose one of those than it would be to lose one of your four wide receivers. And I envision the Steelers only keeping four of those with David Gilreath on the practice squad.
Right, right. And the Mike Wallace situation will obviously affect some of that as things move along there. Dave, one of the guys I interview a lot on 970 ESPN is Matt Williamson, who works for Scouts Inc. and ESPN.com. He did his top 200 list. I think it's generally out there. No big surprises. I don't think he's not a lot of stir here. There's tons of debate around things like this, and people love lists. But the top five are Rodgers, Brady, Breeze, Calvin Johnson, Darrell Revis. Pretty hard to argue with that group. DeMarcus Ware, Adrian Peterson, coming off injury, obviously. Larry Fitzgerald, Rob Gronkowski, and Justin Smith were the next five. Another, obviously, excellent group. Jimmy Graham at 11 and Patrick Willis at 12. Jimmy Graham might have raised some eyebrows. Terrell Suggs isn't going to play this year, probably, at 13. Then Benz at 14, Manning at 15, Manning at 16. Eli just ahead of Peyton there. Haloti Ngata at 17. We start to get into some of the division in the Steelers here. Andre Johnson, 18. James Harrison, 19. Jake Long at 20. Joe Thomas at 21. Troy Polamalu at 22. Interesting group there. When you get from kind of 13 to 22, you get three Steelers in there with Ben Harrison and Polamalu, and you get a bunch of divisional guys with Joe Thomas, Haloti Ngata. We're going to see the Manning boys this year, both of them. So and Terrell Suggs. So I just thought it was kind of interesting to look at, and I talked to Matt a lot, and interesting group of guys.
Yeah, you could cherry pick that thing to death, and be right on some and be wrong on the other. So I've never been a big fan of these rankings and all. They sure do get people upset though.
Oh, yeah. People, you know, my guys first. That's
yeah. You disrespecting our team.
Yeah, right. The other thing that got people a little stirred up, Jim Irsay tweeting last night or the past day or two that a couple trades might be in the works. A lot of speculation when he says that. Is it Maurice Jones-Drew? Is it Mike Wallace? He kind of calmed the rhetoric down a little bit and said 9 times out of 10 these things don't happen, but they were thinking of giving a high draft pick up. I think that probably means a second or a third round pick, and then speculation was it was a corner. Nothing further on that. The other thing that maybe came out of last night is we've seen all the quarterback battles around the league get resolved. Probably the one most surprising to me, or the two that are, the, I guess, there are two that are open. The Miami situation's open. We'll see how Ryan Tannehill does in this last game. I'd really like to see Matt Moore get another shot. I've said 100 times on the radio I'm a Matt Moore fan. The one in Seattle's wide open, it appears, and Russell Wilson has been very impressive in camp, and he's going to get most of the playing time this week, and if he plays well, he may start in front of Matt Flynn, which would be, I think, surprise most people. And then you had the pillow fight down in Arizona last night. where Skelton and Cobb are just handing it back and forth to each other.
Yeah, and what the hell was Skelton doing laughing on the sideline during that game after Cobb threw a – looked like he threw a drop. It looked like the damn football rolled off the end of the table on one of those interceptions there. But what a mess, man. What a mess the Cardinals have over there. And, boy, Larry Fitzgerald, he's going to be fit to be tied a couple weeks into this season, I have a feeling there. But, yeah, it's fun to watch some of this. It's especially fun to watch this in the third week of the preseason when you're getting to see a lot of the offenses and all. Flacco had a good game for the Ravens yesterday. But, you know, it's still preseason.
Yep, and Dave, we got things to get to. We're going to wrap this thing up, but the refs are nothing's been done. You expect them to be in all week one?
I'm going to go out there and say yes, they're going to get something done.
All right, I'm with you as well. All right.
One other thing, we got a nice email from our buddy Carlos Salas.
Salas, yep.
Again from Honduras. People probably remember, I've got a post up somewhere about the work that he did with the kids over there in the Steeler Nation and over there. Fantastic guy. He sent us a hello from Honduras again with a great picture of him holding a terrible towel there. So, Carlos, keep up your good work over there, what you're doing and all. We appreciate you checking back in with us.
Yeah, we've gotten some great pictures with people with towels, so feel free to fire those along to us as well. You can email us at
theterriblepodcast@gmail.com.
Of course, follow Dave on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow the podcast at Terrible Podcast. You can follow me at Hammer Speaks. We got to keep those donations coming. they make me smile. They keep us in business. We got a bunch more this week, so thank you for that. You can do that on the website, SteelersDepot.com, or admin at PayPal. What is that, Dave? Admin at Steelers Depot.
Right. If you want to just go straight to PayPal and enter into an address, it's admin@SteelersDepot.com.
And a little bit of news for me this week. I'm now going to be full-time at 970 ESPN in Pittsburgh. I'll be on starting next Wednesday, Monday through Friday. After that, 2 to 4. The second hour will be devoted to the Steelers all season long. Doesn't mean the first hour won't also, but the second hour, 3 to 4, will certainly be Steeler talk. I'll also be doing a pregame show for the Steelers 4 hours before kickoff. So I'll be the pregame show to the network coverage, and that will happen every Sunday. So you'll get a full dose of me straight through the football season.
And we'll start off these 3 week prior to the Denver game, I think. After the Denver game, I guess is when we're going
to
go.
Yeah, no, we'll do it. We'll try to do it prior to the Denver game, leading into the Denver game, first week of the season.
Yeah, because we'll try to have a beat writer and all on as well too to preview that thing.
All right. Well, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.